Sakundalam,
Sakundalam,
Charu,
Charu,
Kiritam,
Kiritam,
Bhushanam,
Bhushanam,
Babo,
Babo,
Prithivyam,
Prithivyam,
Patitam,
Patitam,
Samujwalam,
Samujwalam,
Aheti,
Aheti,
Sadhu,
Sadhu,
Iti,
Iti,
Rishaya,
Rishaya,
Shureshwara,
Shureshwara,
Malayair,
Malayair,
Mukundam,
Mukundam,
Vikiranta,
Vikiranta,
Idire,
Idire,
Sakundalam Charu Kirita Bhushanam
Sakundalam Charu Kirita Bhushanam
Sakundalam Charu Kirita Bhushanam
Sakundalam Charu Kirita Bhushanam
Babo Prithivyam Patitam Sarujwalam
Babo Prithivyam Patitam Sarujwalam
Prithivyam Patitam Samujwalam
Babo Prithivyam Patitam Samujwalam
Aheti Sadviti Rishaya Sureshwara
Aheti Sadviti Rishaya Sureshwara
Aheti Sadviti Rishaya Sureshwara
Aheti Sadviti Rishaya Sureshwara
Vikiranta idire Malayar Mukundam Vikiranta idire
Malayar Mukundam Vikiranta idire
Sakundalam Charu Kirita Bhushanam
Sakundalam Charu Kirita Bhushanam
Prithivyam Patitam Samujwalam
Babo Prithivyam Patitam Samujwalam
Aheti Sadviti Rishaya Sureshwara
Aheti Sadviti Rishaya Sureshwara
Malayar Mukundam Vikiranta Idire
Malayar Mukundam Vikiranta Idire
Sa,
together with
Kundalam,
Kundalam,
earrings,
Charu,
attractive,
Kirita,
with a helmet,
Bhushanam,
decorated,
Babo,
shone. Prithivyam,
on the ground.
Patitam,
fallen.
Samujwalam,
brilliant.
Ha ha iti.
Alas.
Sadhu iti.
Excellent.
Rishaya,
sages.
Sureshwara, and the chief demigods.
Malayai,
with flower garlands.
Mukundam,
Lord Krishna.
Vikiranta,
Sharing.
Sharing.
Idire.
They worshipped.
Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada.
Fallen on the ground, Balmasura's head shone brilliantly, decorated as it was with earrings and an attractive helmet. As cries of alas, alas, and well done arose, the sages and principal demigods worshipped Lord Mukunda by showering him with flower garlands. Translation responsibly. Fallen on the ground.
Fallen on the ground.
Balmasura's head.
Balmasura's head.
Shone brilliantly.
Shone brilliantly.
Decorated as it was.
Decorated as it was.
With earrings and an attractive helmet.
With earrings and an attractive helmet.
As cries of alas, alas.
As cries of alas, alas.
And well done.
And well done.
Arose.
Arose.
The sages and principal demigods.
The sages and principal demigods.
Worship Lord Mukunda.
Worship Lord Mukunda.
By showering him with flower garlands.
By showering him with flower garlands.
Text 23. The goddess of the earth then approached Lord Krishna and presented him with Aditi's earrings, which were made of glowing gold inlaid with shining jewels. She also gave him a Vijayanti flower garland, Varuna's umbrella, and the peak of Mandara Mountain. O king, after bowing down to him and then standing with joined palms, the goddess, her mind filled with devotion, began to praise the Lord of the universe, whom the best of demigods worship. Goddess Bhumi said, obeisances unto you, O Lord of the chief of the demigods, O holder of the conch shell, disc and club, O supreme soul within the heart. You assume your various forms to fulfill your devotees' desires. Obeisances unto you. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands and lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. Purport. Queen Kunti offered this same prayer, which is found in first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapter 8, text 22. The synonyms and translation given here are taken from Srila Prabhupada's rendering of that text. We may also note that although Kunti's prayer occurs early in the Bhagavatam, she offered it many years after the incident described here. Omigyan Timanandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Litam Yena Tismai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manogishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Swa Padantitam Vancha Kalpatra Rubyascha Kripa Sindupi Evacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda
Shri Advaita Gadadhara
Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama
So we see here that all of Krishna's pastimes within the Bhagavatam are extraordinary. There's nothing ordinary about Krishna. We may be ordinary people, but Krishna is not ordinary. He's not like us. He is extraordinary in every way. And he displays his pastimes to show his all-powerful nature. And the reason he shows his all-powerful nature to his devotees is that he wants to inspire his devotees with confidence in his protection and his mercy. Just like in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is one chapter in the Mahabharata. So in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita it mentions that as the battle is about to begin, then even though the Pandava's army was smaller than the Kaurava's army, and the Kaurava's army was 11 Akshahini divisions, and the Pandava's army was 7 Akshahini divisions. So it means the Kaurava's army was about one third bigger than the Pandava's army. It was a huge army like that. So when the sun rose on the morning of the battle, and the Pandavas saw the army of the Kauravas, it was massive. It was said that the army went from, just like if you're in the desert or if you're in somewhere where it's very flat and there's no trees around, that's what Kurukshetra is like. Kurukshetra is very open space, very not a lot of trees around, very large open space, for a good place for a battlefield. So it is said that when you look to the horizon, when you looked east and you looked west, as far as you could see, that's how far the army went. Right? It's just like an ocean, like that. I think it said there were 640 million soldiers in the battle. So you just imagine. Imagine waking up in the morning and looking at an army which is full of about 400 million warriors, and they all want to kill you. So this was what the Pandavas woke up to. Good morning. So they woke up and they saw this huge army. But when it came time for the battle, when it was time to fight, because before the battle took place, Krishna tried to stop the battle. Sometimes people argue this point with us. They say, your God is a God of war, but God is actually a God of love. So your God cannot be, your God is not a very good God. But you have to understand, our God tried to do everything in his power to stop that battle. Right? He went to Duryodhana personally. The Supreme Lord, right, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, went to Duryodhana, right, as a messenger of the Pandavas. He took the position of a humble messenger. And he went to the Kauravas on behalf of the Pandavas. And he said to Duryodhana, please do not fight. Let's make peace. Right? So people sometimes, they give this immature argument to us that your God is a God of war. No, our God is a God of peace. Right? But when there was no other resort but to fight, then Krishna said, okay, now we will fight. We've tried everything else. So now we will fight. So before the battle took place, Krishna said to Duryodhana and to Arjuna, he said, I will give one of you my army and the other one can have me. So he said, whoever I see first in the morning, when I wake up in the morning, then whoever I see first can choose first whether he'll have my army or he'll have me. So both of them went first thing in the morning, before Krishna even woke up, both of them went to Krishna's room. And they walked in, and Arjuna got there first. And Arjuna saw Krishna was taking rest, so he sat down at Krishna's feet, because he felt that was his position as the Lord's servant. And Duryodhana came in and he thought, oh no, Arjuna has beaten me. But I will still, I have a hope, I'll sit next to Krishna's head. And then when Krishna wakes up, the first thing he'll see is me, and he'll say, Duryodhana, you have come, what do you want? And then I will choose his army. So then Krishna woke up. But when Krishna woke up, naturally Krishna looked down towards his feet, because naturally Krishna was expecting his devotees to be at his feet. Krishna knows his devotees will always sit at his feet. So because he knew that, then immediately he looked at his feet immediately as he woke up, and he said, Arjuna, you have come. And then he looked and he saw Duryodhana, and he said, Duryodhana, you've also come. He said, Arjuna, I've seen first, so he can choose first. Arjuna, you can have me or you can have my armies. And Arjuna said, I want you. And then Duryodhana acted as if he was very disappointed. Duryodhana was, oh no. Oh Krishna, no, I can't have you. Okay, I'll have your armies. But actually he was happy. He was good. Now I've got the armies. I will crush them. So when the battle came, and it was 11 Akshahinis to 7, but in the morning, when everyone woke up in the morning, they saw the two armies facing each other. And then when it was time to blow the conch shells, right? Because before the battle begins, everyone blows their conch shells and they beat drums, right? And everyone calls out like that. So you try to intimidate the opposite army before the battle begins, right? Huge cry. So the Kauravas, led by Bhishma, who's the most powerful warrior on earth, they blew their conch shells and they beat their drums, and it was a tumultuous sound. But then, after they made their battle cry, then the Pandavas made their battle cry. But then when Krishna picked up his conch shell, Panchajanya, and Arjuna picked up his conch shell, which one is it? Devadatta? Devadatta picked up. And then Yudhishthira picked up his conch shell called the Ananta Vijaya, I think it says in the Gita. And then Bhima picked up his conch shell called the Pondra, I think it's called. And then Sahadeva and Nakula picked up their conch shells called the, I can't remember either. Not that. So everyone blew their conch shells. And it said that sound, there was so much confidence in the devotees' hearts in Krishna, because Krishna himself was on Arjuna's chariot. So they had so much confidence in Krishna that they blew their conch shells with such confidence and such a transcendentally, the sound was just so full of confidence and so overwhelming, right? Because of Krishna's presence, because of the devotee's presence, it cracked the hearts of the Kauravas. They knew at that moment they would lose the battle. They knew they would lose. They knew they would not be victorious at that point, even though it was too late to walk away. Right, you can't walk away at that point. Right, you can't say, "Oh no, sorry, we made a mistake. Actually, we were going somewhere else. We just turned up here this morning." It was too late. They had to fight like that. But there was no hope of victory. They knew at that point there was no hope of victory. They knew everyone would die. They knew Bhima would kill all of them. Right, all 100 brothers. They knew it at that point in time. There was no hope of living like that. So, this all took place. Why? Because the devotees have so much confidence in Krishna's protection, right? In Krishna's mercy. And that's how the devotees naturally feel, right? We feel protected by Krishna, right? And that is the mood of the devotees. And you'll see that Krishna performs all of these pastimes just for that reason. Krishna performs his pastimes just to inspire the devotees that I will protect you. Right? Just like you see in the in this pastime, Krishna had to come to the city of Naraka, right, Balmasura. And the city was impenetrable. Even the demigods could not penetrate that city. But Krishna just entered the city on the back of his carrier, Garuda. Garuda himself is enough to destroy Balmasura. What to speak of Krishna sitting on Garuda? Right? This is like an undefeatable combination. Okay. Just like on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Prabhupada describes, it's described in the beginning of the, in the first chapter of the Gita, that Krishna was sitting on the chariot, Arjuna was sitting on the chariot, Hanuman was on the flag, right? And Hanuman had already said to Bhima in the forest, when Bhima met Hanuman, yeah, because what was Bhima's relationship with Hanuman? Right, it's his younger brother. Right, so Bhima was in the forest and he was on the side of the Himalayas, and then one day he was going up the Himalayas and he was just striding up the Himalayas, son of the wind god. Right, he was just striding up the Himalayas, just pushing trees aside, you know, just huge trees, just pushing them aside, just, you know, he's just going up the Himalayas. And then he got, as he was going up there, he came across one huge monkey laying across the path. And Bhima said, "Please move," because the monkey was old. Right? So you always offer respect to those who are older than you. That's Vedic culture. So the monkey was old. So then he said to the monkey, he said, "Please move, my dear monkey. I need to go past." And the monkey said, "I'm too old." He said, you have to move me. And he said, please just move your tail so I can go past. You cannot step over a superior. Actually, you cannot step over anything. Right? You see, in Vedic culture, it's offensive to step over a devotee or Krishna's paraphernalia. Right? The flowers which we're using to make Krishna's garlands, the bhoga which we're using to offer Krishna, any of Krishna's paraphernalia, it's offensive to step over it or to touch it with your feet. You have to be very careful when you come into the temple and you're walking through the devotees. You don't step over the devotees. Sometimes you see devotees come and they step over like the devotees' knees. It's offensive. It's an aparad like that. So when you go through, then you have to put your hand down and you ask the devotees to please move so that you can pass through. So he said to Hanuman, please, please move. And then Hanuman, the old monkey, said, you have to move my tail. Right? And then Bhima said, no problem. So he went to pick up the tail of the monkey, and this is Bhima, who is as strong as 80,000 elephants. Right? And he went to pick up the tail and he's trying to lift the tail with all of his strength, and he couldn't move the tail. And then he looked at this monkey, and then he tried to pick up the tail again, and he looked at him. Right? And he thought, you must be Hanuman. Right? Who else could you be? Who else could be this powerful? He said, you must be Hanuman. He said, yes. And he said, you are my younger brother. And he said, what are you doing here? And he said, I've been laying here since Lord Ram left the planet. Lord Ram left the planet many, many years ago. And since Lord Ram has left, I've been just laying here, feeling separation from Lord Ram. Just like we saw in a few chapters ago, Jambavan, who was also in the Battle of Lanka, right, the battle against Ravana between Lord Ramachandra and Ravana, then Jambavan also stayed until the time when Krishna appeared. So Hanuman was also living at that time. He was in the Himalayas. He was staying there feeling separation from Lord Ramachandra at that time. So Hanuman said, I will assist you. He said, a very great battle is coming up. And he said, I will assist you during the battle. He said, during the battle, I will ride on the flag of Arjuna on his chariot. And during the battle, as Arjuna and Krishna are coming towards the opposing army, he said, I will shout war cries. Like big monkey roars, right? And he said, I will assist you. So I will shout war cries and I will scare the opposing army. So when Arjuna was coming towards all the soldiers on the battlefield, all the Kaurava soldiers, when he was coming towards them on the battlefield, and Krishna and Arjuna were coming towards them, and you have to understand, Arjuna himself was enough to intimidate ordinary soldiers. Right? Just hearing his name was enough to make everyone tremble. Right? He was so powerful. Right? So just hearing Arjuna's name and seeing him coming towards you on the battle with red eyes, right, angry, Arjuna coming to get you. Right, that's enough to make you tremble. And then Hanuman's on the flag, right, screaming. Right? And it said that when they heard Hanuman scream, right, war cry, then it said the soldiers on the Kaurava army passed stool and urine simultaneously. Right? They just went. Yeah, there's a warrior, there's a chatriyas. But when Hanuman was coming and Arjuna was coming and Krishna was coming, then what's the chance? So this is our God. Right? Krishna is looking after us. Right? And you see in this pastime, Krishna comes with Garuda, right? And they sweep down and they're just Krishna is destroying the army. Right? Krishna, first of all, uses the club. Right? As he comes into the fortress, he uses the club, just smashes everything apart. Right? And then there's warriors on the four turrets, or the four sides of the castle, and they're all firing arrows at Krishna and weapons at Krishna, and Krishna then takes out his bow and just obliterating everyone. With his bow. What's his bow called? Gandhi. No, Gandiva is Arjuna's book. Okay. Krishna's bone is called?
Sangha.
Shanga.
Shanga.
Shanga Danda means the one who carries Shanga. Right? So his bow is called Shanga. Right? Very powerful bow. So Krishna is just destroying them all. And while he's doing it, this is Krishna. Just like on the battle of Kurukshetra, all the Kshatriyas, before the battle started, right, they put on their armor, right, put on their helmets. Everyone was ready for battle, right? And Krishna, he was on Arjuna's chariot, he had a garland on. He's the only one on the battlefield with a garland on. And when was the last time, you know, you're about to have a fight with someone, and you say, just wait a moment, I just have to put my garland on. Get your garland on, you know, get yourself looking nice, and okay, let's go. So this is Krishna, right? If you're going to fight, you have to look good. So this is Krishna. Right? This is how powerful Krishna is. This is how unintimidated Krishna is. Right? He's all powerful. There's nothing that can stop Krishna. So when he was fighting all of Bulmasura's army, Narakasura's army, then at that time, it is said that Satyabhama was sitting on the back of Garuda with him. So you can imagine Krishna, right, shooting arrows and killing soldiers and everything, and Satyabhama's right behind him. You know, he must be having a conversation with Satyabhama, right? Just see my power, right? Just see my potency. Right? That was a good one. Did you see that one? Yeah. Let's go with one of his arrows, right? And Satyabhama's there, just enjoying, like that. No problems for him. And then, when he brings out his ultimate weapon, right, when he needs to destroy the demons, or when there's a very powerful obstacle, then he brings out the ultimate weapon. What is Krishna's ultimate weapon?
Sudarshana.
Yeah. Right? Sudarshana. Sudarshana means auspicious. Darshan. Right? Sudarshana is effulgent. Right? The chakra of Krishna, his disc. Right? He invokes Sudarshana. And then that's his ultimate weapon, unstoppable weapon. Sudarshan is actually a form of the Lord himself. Sudarshan, we worship Sudarshan. Sudarshan is actually Vishnu Tattva. It's the Lord's weapon, but it's also a form of himself. So it's his ultimate weapon, just destroys everything. So for devotees, we understand that Krishna is protecting us. Right? We always have Krishna's protection. And devotees, they feel. And that's why we must hear the pastimes of Krishna. Right? We must absorb ourselves in hearing the pastimes of Krishna. Because when you hear the pastimes of Krishna, you understand Krishna's ultimate and absolute superior position. Krishna is the supreme personality. And we are his devotees. So if we surrender to Krishna, we have nothing to fear. Right? What is there to fear when you have Krishna and Garuda and Arjuna on your side? Right? When they're all looking after you. Just like one devotee said to Prabhupada one time, Srila Prabhupada, I'm being overcome by Maya. My material desires are overcoming me. Right? Does anyone feel like that sometimes? Sometimes your material desires overcome you? Right? Sometimes very hard to overcome your material desires. Prabhupada said, you just place all of your material desires in front of me, and with one kick, I'll remove them all. So that is the position. If we take shelter of Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees, we have nothing to fear. They will look after us. They will take away all of our difficulties. So that is the position of the devotee. We don't fear that there is anything to be concerned about. But of course, because we're not pure devotees yet, often we do feel that the material energy is very powerful and very overwhelming. But when we become more faithful and deeper in our devotion to Krishna, then we'll feel there is no obstacle. Right? Feel there's nothing to be afraid of. As long as we're Krishna conscious, as long as we remember Krishna, as long as we continue to chant the holy names of Krishna, then there'll be nothing that can harmless, as the word is. So we see Krishna is showing in this pastime, what is the whole point of killing Narakasura?
To get back his grandson.
To get back his grandson, yeah. Well, what's his principal purpose of performing this pastime?
To free 16,100 girls.
Yeah.
In his captivity.
To free 16,100 princesses.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, he shows us his supreme position, right? Why have one wife when you can have 16,108? Right? If you want to enjoy, don't just get one. Get 16,108. Right? Once again, this is the difference between us and Krishna. Right? We think we're pretty good. We think we're big time. We think we're pretty significant. Right? You can't even keep one wife happy. Right? You can't even keep one wife satisfied. Right? What to speak of two? You couldn't even keep one happy. Krishna keeps 16,108 fully satisfied at every moment. This is his supreme position. Right? So he wanted to marry these princesses. These princesses were his eternal consorts. Right? But it's not that they were touched or contaminated by Narakasura or Balmasura. Right? He was only relating with like Maya forms, material forms, just like in the pastime of when Ravana took Sita. Then it says that there was no contact between Ravana and Sita. A demon cannot touch the goddess of fortune. So some Maya form may have been there that he was contacting. He kidnapped 16,100 princesses, but actually they were Krishna's eternal associates. And when Krishna came, then they surrendered to him. And they said, please marry us. They said, no one else will marry us now. Because in Vedic culture, if the woman has been touched before she gets married, then she's considered to be contaminated. That's how strict the culture was, like that. So therefore, they could not marry anyone else. And Krishna said to them, do not worry, I'll marry all of you. Now, normally, this would not be proper, that you have touched a woman who has been touched by another person. But Krishna, and this point is made by Prabhupada in his purports all through the Bhagavatam, Krishna is not concerned with one's fallen condition. Or Krishna is not concerned with one's material position. Krishna is only concerned with the devotee's bhakti. The material position is not what concerns Krishna. If the material position concerned Krishna, none of us would be allowed to enter the temple.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have any qualification. From a material standpoint, we're all fallen. Kalo, Sudra, Sambhav. Everyone in Kali Yuga is born a Sudra or less. Right? All the activities I performed before I became a devotee, right? I don't even come to the level of a Sudra. Right? I'm on the level of a Yavana or a Malecha, which means the lowest humans, the lowest, right? Who eat animals. Right, who have sinful habits, like that. So therefore, we don't have any qualification. But if we surrender to Krishna, no matter what the devotee's past has been, if the devotee surrenders to Krishna, Krishna sees the bhakti, right? Because the bhakti is pure, and the bhakti is what Krishna is actually interested in and what he actually reciprocates with. Right? Krishna does not take interest in your material position or your disqualification. And similarly, Krishna does not take interest in your material qualifications. Right? You can't come to Krishna and say, well, Krishna, I have a PhD. So therefore, I'm your most qualified devotee. Oh, Krishna, I did so many things in the material world. I was so successful. You know, I was a great actress or a great actor or a very famous politician or a rock star. And then I became a devotee. Yeah, it doesn't concern Krishna. Right? Krishna is only concerned with the devotion of the devotee. So Krishna marries these 16,108 princesses just to show his supreme position. Right? And he keeps all of the princesses fully satisfied. And the princesses have different moods. Right? Just like Rukmini is an expansion of Chandravali. in Vrindavan. So Rukmini has a very submissive mood towards Krishna. She's very submissive towards Krishna. But Satyabhama is an expansion of Srimati Radharani. So she has a very contrary mood towards Krishna. She is unsubmissive to Krishna. Bhama means like contrary or unsubmissive to Krishna. So Krishna every day when he finishes his pastimes, Krishna goes to the Sudama assembly hall every day in Dwarka during the day. That's what he does. He goes to the Sudama assembly hall with King Ugrasen and Vasudeva and all of the great personalities within Dwarka, and they discuss all day how to run Dwarka, how to run the government. And then at the end of the day he comes home very quickly to Satyabhama's palace. Because Srila Prabhupada mentions that if he comes home late, he gets henpecked. Right? Yeah. Where were you? And why are you late? You don't love me? Right? Yeah. Everything that happens in the material world is just a reflection of what happens in the spiritual world. All the pastimes. I can say whatever I want because my wife is not present. But factually, this is what takes place. So, but in the absolute reality, his pastimes are the source of unlimited pleasure for Krishna. When Satyabhama says to him, so, where have you been? That gives him unlimited pleasure. In the material world, it's a source of unlimited misery. Unlimited misery. Prabhupada says, man is good, woman is good, but together they are bad. This means that if the man and woman are just acting on the platform of the body, just as man and woman, there cannot be any happiness there. Right? It means that you will suffer. As long as a man and woman just relate as a man and a woman, you will suffer. Not that. But when you begin to relate on the spiritual platform, right, in relationship to Krishna and assist each other in Krishna's service, the relationship can become very peaceful and sublime. Like that. So here, Goddess Bhumi, she begins to offer prayers to Krishna. And she says, in the first prayer that she offers, she says, you assume various forms to fulfill your devotee's desires. So what does this mean? Krishna assumes various forms to fulfill his devotees' desires. What does that mean?
He comes in different forms as Narasimha, comes to different incarnations. Based on the devotees.
Yeah, he takes different forms like that. So does this mean that Krishna's form is not eternal? That he just takes that form temporarily? Is this what it means, that Krishna's forms are not eternal? Because it says here that he assumes the form according to what his devotee desires. No, these forms are eternal. Sometimes Mayavadis or impersonalists, they will say that he assumes a form which the devotee desires, therefore he is formless. Mm-hmm. But when the devotee desires, then the form comes. No, it's not like that. The form is eternal. Satchit Ananda Vigraha. Vigraha means sat. The form is a sat vigraha. It's an eternal form, full of bliss and full of knowledge. Right? It's not a temporary manifestation. So these forms eternally exist, but the form Krishna reveals is according to the love of the devotee. Right? If the devotee worships God in terms of awe and reverence, then Lord Krishna. Assumes a form for that devotee which is reciprocal to his desire. If the devotee wants to worship the Lord with great awe and reverence, then he takes on a very opulent form of Lord Narayan with four arms, like that very opulent Vaikuntha form. But we see here in Dwarka that Krishna does not have four arms generally. Krishna has two arms because the devotees in Dwarka have more intimate love towards Krishna. So therefore Krishna takes on a more intimate form, like a human-like form. But then, in the third canto of the Bhagavatam, Uddhava is explaining to Vidura that although Krishna appeared in Dwarka And he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, living with them. But the devotees in Dwarka did not understand his more intimate nature. And therefore, Uddhava explains, they missed the opportunity to relate to Krishna in an intimate way, that Krishna was our friend or our son or our lover. Now, they could not have that intimate relationship with Krishna. It was always a feeling that he was supreme. They always had an understanding of his Aishwarya or his opulence or his power. So Uddhava explains to Vidura in the third canon, explains that actually the residents of Vrindavan were the devotees who actually could fully relish their exchange with Krishna, because the exchange was full of intimacy, because it was free of the conception that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In Vrindavan, the devotees, they may know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but they don't care for it. In other words, sometimes it describes, just like when you're boiling milk, sometimes straw may come to the surface in the pot through the boiling process. Sometimes a bit of straw will come, then it will go under again, come up again. So it is explained by the Acharyas that sometimes in Vrindavan, when something very tumultuous happens, right, when Indra comes and he starts raining on Vrindavan, right, and then the water's filling up and everyone becomes very scared, very frightened, or when the Kaliya serpent comes, or when there's these different pastimes, and the devotees, some like tumultuous situations, but just like when you're boiling the milk pot, then at that point in time, they may remember temporarily, just like when the straw comes up for a moment in the pot, they may remember temporarily Krishna is God. And they begin to call out to Krishna, 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 Mahabaho, Supreme Lord, Krishna, help us, protect us. But then, when the pastimes are passing and Krishna is protecting them, then it all goes down again. And they think, no, he's just our friend, or he's just our son. He couldn't actually do all these things. Just like, so Krishna is reciprocating with his devotees according to the devotee's desire. Like that. So one time there was a pastime in Vrindavan, in Kamyavan. Has anyone been to Kamyavan? Right out in the western side of Vrindavan. Vrindavan has 12 forests. So right out in the western side of Vrindavan. It's out towards Rajasthan. Like right out the western part of Vrindavan. Then, one time in Kamyavan, Krishna was with the gopis. And the gopis were arguing with Krishna. As always takes place in the Vrindavan pastimes, Krishna and the gopis are always having quarrels and arguments and debates like that. So Krishna and the gopis were discussing, and Krishna said, anyway, I am the Supreme Lord. And the gopis said, you're not the Supreme Lord. And he said, yes, I am the Supreme. In my previous lifetime, I was Lord Ramachandra. And they said, you're not the Supreme Lord. Like that. He said, you always tell these stories. Yeah, you always make these big statements. Yes, I am the Supreme, and I did this, and I killed that demon. I said, you're just a cowherd boy. I said, just go and milk your cows. Who do you think? And Krishna says, no. So then, Krishna, to prove to the gopis that he was actually no different from Lord Ramachandra, Krishna began to play his flute. And when he played his flute, then all the monkeys, right? You know what monkeys are like? Has anyone been to Vrindavan? What the monkeys are like in Vrindavan? Right? They're always mischievous. Monkeys are mischievous. You never see them very, very, yeah. But when Krishna began to play the flute, all the monkeys came and they surrounded Krishna and they all folded their hands. Right? It's very respectful. Just like when Lord Ramachandra attacked Lanka with the monkey army, right? They all attacked Ravana, right? A whole army of monkeys like that. So all the monkeys, Krishna began to play the flute and they all came and they began to act very submissively. And then Krishna, he said something to them in monkey language, and then they all ran around and they began to pick up rocks and they threw them onto the water. There's one lake there in Kamyavan where this pastime takes place, and there was a lake there and they all began to throw the rocks, and the rocks began to float and make a bridge right across the lake. And then Krishna got on the bridge and he walked across the rocks across the lake, and all the monkeys followed him. And then he looked at the gopis and he said, yeah, do you believe me now? like that. And I said, anyway, you can just. You always make your stories. Yeah, you know some magic or something. You're not God. So this is rasa, right? Rasa means as the devotee desires, then Krishna reciprocates. Just like we see in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam earlier in this canto, we see that Krishna left the rasa dance. Now, why did he leave the rasa dance? Because he wanted to increase the desire of the gopis to be with him. They went mad. So then Krishna left, and then he hid behind one bush. And the gopis were running through the forest, and they were so mad, they were talking to everyone in the forest. They were saying to the deer, "Deer, have you seen Krishna?" And the deer just looked at them, and then they ran over to the tree, and they said, "My dear Malati flower," they were speaking to the flowers, "have you seen Krishna?" Right? And then they did not, and then they kept running, they were just, "Where's Krishna? Where's Krishna?" And finally, they saw behind the bush, there is Krishna. So they ran behind the bush, and then Krishna had a four-armed form like Lord Narayan. He was standing there looking at them. And they were shocked. And they said, "Lord Narayan, you are here in the forest. What?" And they said, Namaste. They said, "Have you seen Krishna?" And Lord Narayan, he just looked at them. It was actually Krishna, but he just looked at them. And then they ran off, looking for Krishna. But then, Srimati Radharani came. And then she saw, there's Krishna. And she ran around behind the bush, and she saw Lord Narayan was standing there. But then Krishna, because she had so much desire to reciprocate and love Krishna and serve Krishna, she had so much desire to please Krishna, Krishna could not maintain that form of Lord Narayan. And the two arms disappeared. And then he was just standing there with the two arms, Muralida, holding the flute. And then Srimati Radharani and Krishna, then they embraced. They had their pastimes. Okay. So this is because of the love of the devotee. According to the love of the devotee, then Krishna reciprocates like this. So he assumes the form. Queen Kunti says in this first verse, Bhumi Devi says in this first verse, that according to the desire of the devotee, then Krishna reciprocates. That is his nature. Okay. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Just a couple of corrections. In the beginning of the class, it was mentioned that Arjuna came first. Actually, Duryodhana came first and he stand on at the head of Krishna. And because his maternal uncle Shakuni sent him, so go straight away and ask for the army. And then Arjuna came and he said he was a devotee, he sat at the feet, just looking at the feet. And when Krishna woke up, he saw Arjuna first. And then Arjuna and Duryodhana said that I came first here. But Krishna said, but I saw Arjuna first. So Arjuna has got the chance to ask what he wants. And Arjuna asked for Krishna, and Duryodhana was saying, what a fool, that he is asking for one single person and I am getting the army, anyway I am getting what I was here for. So he was very happy about that. So he did not know the... And another thing is that Bhima had the power of 70 elephants, not 80,000, as I have heard.
80,000. Because he was as strong as 10,000 elephants. He was strong as 10,000 elephants. And then one time, Duryodhana poisoned him. And then they poisoned him, and then they tied him up, and they rolled him into the river. And when he went down to the bottom of the river, the Nagas, who live in the river, they bit his body. And then when they bit his body, it neutralized the poison, and he woke up, and he broke out of the ropes. And then he met the king of the Nagas, and the king of the Nagas gave him 8 pots of nectar. And when he drank each of those pots, then his strength increased each time by the turn of 10,000 elephants. So he came out of the river as strong as 80,000 elephants.
In the Mahabharata, which is the one of the serials in India, they show that Naga head was his Kunti Devi's father. something, some relation was there with Kunti Devi, and Bhima, he gave 7 pots and every pot had 10 elephants power. Mm-hmm. So that's what is explained in the Mahabharata. Maybe that is not
authentic. There are so many. Yes, that is not really correct.
Yeah.
Whatever the Bhagavatam says, that is correct.
Yeah, I mean, these are just details.
Mm-hmm.
These are just details. But as far as I understand, he's as strong as 80,000 elephants.
Okay.
70,000, 80,000 elephants. Doesn't make much difference. If someone is as strong as 70,000 elephants or someone as strong as 80,000 elephants, you know, whatever they say, you do it. You don't argue with them. Well, you know, I think you're about 10,000 elephants short. during the fight, during Kurukshetra, Bhima used to pick up the dead elephants around the battlefield. He used to pick up the dead elephants and used to throw them into the elephant army. In the core of his army, knock the elephants out. He'd pick up elephants and throw them back into the army of the elephants to knock all the elephants down like that. That's how strong he was. He used to carry like a two-handed sword. And the sword was something like 12 foot long. Right? Big sword. He couldn't even lift it. And he used to pick it up. And so every time he flung the sword, he would kill 10 men. He was just walking around, just killing, just chopping like that. Very powerful man. Any other questions or comments?
There's one more thing, that why did only Bhima had to kill 100 sons? Why didn't it was that not Arjuna killed any of the sons of Rashtra, only Bhima killed?
Because when Draupadi was insulted at that time, then Bhima said, he took a vow at that time. He said, I will kill all of you, 100 of you. I will kill every one of you. I vow I will kill all of you. And then he looked at Duryodhana, and Duryodhana pulled his dhoti up and showed Draupadi his thigh. In civilized culture, the men never show their thighs. They always wear like gumsha. Yeah, they never show a thigh like that. So he showed the thigh, pulled the dhoti up and showed the thigh, and he said, you come and sit here. So then Bhima, he said, I will kill all of you, 100 of you, I vow I will kill all of you. And he said, you, I will crush that thigh with my club. And then he looked at Dushyant is the one who tried to disrobe Draupadi like that. And he said, I will rip out your heart and I will drink your blood. Right? So then he did that, he did it all. He killed all of them. Any other questions or comments?
For the benefit of the non-Mongol devotees, how do you reconcile that even though Krishna wants to see you there in the battle to have peace, how is still Krishna still God? How do you sort of reconcile that?
That he would do that?
Yeah, that he could make any arrangement.
Because Krishna desired that all the demons would be killed.
Mm.
And Prabhupada explains in the Bhagavatam, he says that he was just waiting to do it all at once.
Mm.
He could have killed them all before the battle, but he just wanted to make an arrangement to do it all at once. And Prabhupada says that he wanted to give his devotees the credit. He is a god of war, but to say he's only a god of war is incorrect. He's a god of peace, actually. He's a god of love, actually. But then, you know, he's also a god of war. Actually, I was reading yesterday in TKG's diary, in Prabhupada's final pastimes, and it was in May in Vrindavan. Yeah, it was in Vrindavan in May of 1977, so Prabhupada was not only 6 months away before Prabhupada left this world. Prabhupada was quite weak at that time, quite ill. And one politician came to see Prabhupada. And Prabhupada was chastising him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really. The way Prabhupada was preaching in the final year, he was so... he was just was cutting people, you know. So when he was in the, just before he came to Vrindavan, he was in Hardwar, Varanasi, and there was Mayavadis coming to see him because he was so famous by that point. Mayavadis were coming to see him. Prabhupada was just crushing them, like just smashing them like that. And they were going away very respectful. They were going away very appreciative of Prabhupada. So, you know. So then this politician comes to see Prabhupada, and Prabhupada is just like cutting him. And then Prabhupada said, he was getting on his case, and he was saying, you know, all you politicians, you know, you're like Gandhi. You know, Gandhi was all, you know, non-violence. So his politician just walked in the room and said, Prabhupada, and he said, you are all sentimental, right? You are all like Gandhi, all non-violence. Krishna says in the first verse of the Bhagavad Gita, Yuyutsava. What happened on the battlefield? He said, this is politician. You know, Prabhupada said, being unsentimental. So Krishna is a god because war is necessary. Right? But it's only necessary under certain circumstances. So someone who is a cultured person tries to avoid conflict. That's the nature of cultured people. You'll see cultured people don't, it's very rare you see a conflict. Yeah, they don't like to argue, they don't like, they just like everything to be nice. And between cultured people, usually things can be nice. But a cultured person will only take things so far. He's not sentimental, not like Gandhi. Gandhi was like, oh, no matter what you do, we'll just keep being peaceful. A cultured person will go so far, but if someone's been very nonsense, then he's like, okay, that's enough. Now we must chastise you. Like that. So that's Krishna's position. Any other?
My question is there are so many universes mentioned, and in every universe, like, there are the yugas happening, the Kali yugas, and so much suffering in society, getting degraded, and so Krishna is there in the spiritual world. He's the creator, he's the father, and why does not he more often visits every place so that everything is alright, like a doctor visits the hospital and checks all the patients are alright?
Krishna's there. There's no problem with Krishna. The whole problem is with the living entity's rebellious attitude towards Krishna. That's the problem. Just like we were reading the Bhagavatam on Monday night when we were teaching our course, Canto 3, Chapter
11.
Was 11?
Yep.
Wasn't 12?
11.
11, yeah, you're right, 11. So, Canto 3, Chapter 11. So, it describes that in Lord Brahma's day, one day of Lord Brahma, there are 71 manus. And Krishna comes, it mentions, Prabhupada mentions, Krishna comes like so many incarnations, just in every manu. So, if you look at a day of Lord Brahma, one day, Krishna's coming like hundreds, thousands of times. So there's no argument, you know, where's Krishna? Krishna is there. Kali Kali Nama Rupe Krishna Avatar. He's here right now in the form of the holy name. The Sankirtan movement is existing. But he appeared only 500 years ago in his original form as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. The problem is the jivas are rebellious, mischievous. That is the problem. It has nothing to do with Krishna. It's not his problem. Where is Krishna? Yeah, Krishna can solve everything. That's his power. Krishna can just take everyone back to Godhead like that. But then why do we have the material world? Because you want to be independent of God. And Krishna wants to see that when you have the right attitude, then he will let you back. Not that he has to do everything. If he has to do everything, then where's the question of love? Where's the question of your endeavor?
But still, he is the creator. He knows well. He knows better than we can. We cannot love him the way he can love us. So it's anyway, even the Vedic science is coming from him. We are not the creators or the, you know, writers or compilers of the Vedanta.
So we should trust his plan. He is God and he's looking after everyone. We should trust him. We should not question the way he does things. He does everything properly. Right? The people who are not doing things properly is us.
But he can increase the duration, he can come more often.
Yeah, but you're missing the entire point. The entire point is it's nothing to do with Krishna, it's all to do with us. That's the problem. You have to admit that you have a problem. If you don't admit you have a problem, how can you fix your problem? Right? If you think you don't have any problem, how do you fix your problem? Well, if everyone in the temple is telling you you have a problem, right? And if you don't do anything about it, then that's your nonsense.
You're talking on behalf of all the living entities, not myself.
Yeah, so that's the answer. You have to understand the position. Any other question?
One comment, Lord. The strength of the Dhritarashtra was also very good. Lord Krishna didn't allow the Dhritarashtra to meet Bhima. He gave them to take a statue of Bhima and then embrace. So the Dhritarashtra's strength was also very, very.
Yeah, I think it mentions the Mahabharata, there was five persons who had the strength of 10,000 elephants. I think Dhritarashtra, I think Duryodhana, Bhima, the one that Bhima killed in Virat's kingdom.
Kichak.
So there was, I think there was five of them who had the strength of 10,000. So it was Duryodhana, Bhima, Dhritarashtra, Kichaka, and I think there was one more who had the strength of 10,000, mentions of the Mahabharata.
Very strong.
Jackson?
Yeah, it might have been Jackson, something like that. There's five of them who were very super powerful. Any other questions or comments? Yes, sir.
When Krishna killed Narakasura's, his men, it says he sent them straight to the god of death on the Yamaraj. Did they get liberated?
They definitely get benefited.
Yeah.
They definitely get benefited. Usually we hear that when Krishna kills. Yeah, Prabhupada mentions in the Bhagavatam, he says that Prabhupada says on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, all the warriors who were killed by Arjuna, the last thing they saw was Krishna. So Prabhupada says there that those who were not envious of Krishna, who didn't have a personal envy towards Krishna, then they all went to Vaikuntha. But Prabhupada says that those who were envious of Krishna, who personally had envy towards him, then they merged into his impersonal Brahman. So I can't say. If it says in the Bhagavatam that they went to Yamaloka, then maybe they had some envy, so they couldn't go into Vaikuntha. So Krishna had to keep them within the material world still. But if someone gets killed by Krishna, it's beneficial. It's never a bad thing. And Yamaraj is a devotee.
Yeah.
So it's all.
Just one more thing, that in Kali Yuga, people were only getting the actual darshan of Krishna. I mean, we are seeing Krishna in the form of deities and his books, but those people who fighting in the battle were actually seeing Krishna. Isn't that just by seeing Krishna they were getting liberated? Because they were seeing Krishna in front of them and
Yeah, that's what we just said. That those who saw Krishna at the time of death, who are not envious, they went to Vaikuntha.
Because they are among so much fortunate people that they, even though they are fighting against Krishna, but they are seeing Krishna. And here people are there who even they don't know about Krishna or they are envious, they are not able to see Krishna, right? So they are among the most fortunate who are at least able to see Krishna.
Like Karna was not envious of Krishna.
Yeah, Karna was not a devotee. Mm-hmm. Okay, so. So then they can merge into the Brahman effulgence. Those who are not devotees.
The point is, as you brought up, we've got the the incarnation of Krishna's incarnation is through the Mahamantra. And then there's Krishna right there. So it's not that Krishna's not here. As you said, the problem with us was here we are saying, why isn't Krishna coming down? But he's right there. So the problem is with us because we don't have a shashu-chakshush, the spiritual vision, to see Krishna right in front of us. And then hear Krishna's holy names, which are not different from him, all through the streets, at least twice or three times a week. So as you said, the problem is with us. There he is. But we can't. And isn't it like we're so heavy in mind, he's right there, and we're asking, why doesn't he come down so we can see him more? Whereas we have, what, 7 darshans a day. You know, that's how covered we are. Even if you're a full-time temple devotee, you're always rushing around and you only come in the temple once a day for the Mongol Adi, and then you never come in. This is our conditioning. Krishna is there. And when you read about during the Dwapara Yuga, deity worship was the main form of self-realization. So there's always deities of Tyatra Vigraha. He was always there. And then they had the other meditative processes, yagyas, and meditation in the other yuga, so he's always there. But we're not always there. We're somewhere else.
That's the problem. And Prabhupada says in one of the purports, which we read recently in the third canto, Prabhupada says, the reason people remain atheistic in this world, because the main problem in the world at this point in time is atheism. People just don't believe in God. And Prabhupada says the reason because of that is because they commit offences to the pure devotees.
Mm.
And you see, that's what they do. Like that. Just like if you look at Christianity in history, like after Jesus appeared, then the people who said they were Christians, like in the few hundred years after Jesus appeared, they used to feed them to the lions. Like in Rome, they used to, someone said they were Christian, like a Christian and a follower of Christ, they fed it to the Rome, to the lions. And then the Spanish Inquisition, when the Spanish were doing their torture bill, if someone was a Christian, then they put him on the Spanish boats, because the Spanish had a huge navy at that time. And each boat required 300 rowers, and the people who rowed, like lived in the boat, you know, they never saw daylight. They were just throwing bread, and they weren't even looked after properly. They had to live in their own stool and urine and everything. And those personality, they were whipped hard, and you know, most of them died within a year or two. Then the people they would put in to be the rowers were the Christians, people who were God's devotees, like that who had faith in God. So this is why people remain atheistic, because so many lifetimes have committed so many offences to devotees of the Lord, and all over the world is offences to devotees taking place. Then that's why they remain atheistic. Krishna keeps them at a distance. So if you're not respectful to devotees, then you cannot make advancement. That's the philosophy of the Bhagavatam. Any other questions or comments? Okay, Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah.